You are now listening to Justice Lit on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Justice Lit. We have another busy yet exciting schedule ahead of us. The sun is shining bright out here, looking back at the studio, in front of the studio. The whole nest is visible from here, and so I could see the sun kind of creeping up. It was a bit gloomy in the morning, but I could see the light shining bright through the windows, which is a good sign. I hope everyone's doing well. I myself have just finished the Shakespeare conference yesterday. I presented one of my papers to an audience at the undergraduate Shakespeare conference. It was a superb time, and so much more thanks to the people who managed it and the people who hosted it. And it was just overall a great experience. And so that was that. We are almost done finals, or the semester, which is crazy because the second semester here seems like it just started yesterday. And so time does really fly fast when you're having fun and when you're also stressed. And so a lot of people I know, including myself, we are all stressed with finals coming up and assignments due in upcoming days. And so please grind hard. I'm sure everyone will persevere and do well. I do have a runny and stuffy nose for some reason. It always happens during this time of year. And the studio inside seems a little bit dusty. I'm not sure why, but I'm just kind of bearing through. But other than that, we have another episode of Shakespeare Sonnets to go over. We left off at Sonnet 4, and so we'll do that. But, of course, before that, we have some songs. I have some songs I want to play. And so, before some ads, show promos, and PSAs, or after those, I'll play some songs. But other than that, we have some ads, show promos, and PSAs, and so we'll be back after that. Here we go.
Tune your radio to the CITR 101.9 FM on a Tuesday, specifically at 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. for saxophone Hella Permitti or saxophone Len Wee. Hosted by moi, accompanied with the improvisationalists, saxophonists, composers, and musicians of our great era. Such as Anthony Braxton, Albert Ailer, Solange, Ghostface Killah, Lorna Coleman, Sonny Rollins. That's 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. on a Tuesday to listen to saxophone a la Primiti or saxophone Lenui. Oh, yeah!
Power Chord Heavy Metal Radio, bringing you the best metal for over 30 years on CITR. Tune in every Saturday from 1 to 3.
If you enjoy bluegrass and old-time music, please join up and become a member of the Bluegrass Music Association of Canada, the BMAC. With your membership, you'll receive a quarterly full-color Bluegrass Canada magazine, as well as have access to the Bluegrass Canada website. Your membership will also allow you to contribute to the nomination process of the Canadian Bluegrass Music Hall of Fame. Help BMAC promote bluegrass artists with up-to-date information, including band members, performance locations, and helpful advice for bands wishing to travel to the USA. And finally, it will allow you to access information for festivals and events across Canada, bluegrass radio listings, organization partnerships, and a resource library for all things bluegrass. To learn more, log on to bluegrasscanada.org or call Mike Higgins at membership at 905-567-4708.
Looking for an audio escape to put your mind at ease? Landscapes by Dune is a musical journey through sampling and field recording. From the busy streets of Toronto to BC's picturesque landscapes, the Belgian artist recorded an array of sounds during his travels across Canada. Landscapes will be released on Pop Guitari Records Bandcamp on December 8th and will be available on all streaming platforms on December 15th. For more information, check out at Dune as Dune on Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud.
Storytelling is powerful. Our stories carry personal and collective histories, build bridges of understanding, and shine light on unseen truths. Your story, your voice, your power. CITR and Discorder is excited to announce the release of 5 unique podcasts as a part of its Power and Voice podcast incubation program. Power and Voice is an entry-level educational program created by CITR to surpass traditional barriers to entry into the medium of spoken word radio and podcasting. The result is a series of podcasts demonstrating a wide diversity of work in genre, structure, and content. Tune in every day from April 14th to 18th from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. to hear Power and Voice storytellers share their stories on their own terms and in their own words.
If the news are getting you down or you're tired of scrolling on your phone, Massey Books is the one-stop shop for you. A 100% Indigenous-owned business that is committed to giving back to local charities, community initiatives, and organizations, Massey Books has a vast selection of rare and unique books, as well as a diverse range of books that are from underrepresented authors. You can shop online at masseybooks.com or visit their store on 229 East Georgia Street in Chinatown. They are open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Wednesday to Saturday and 12 to 5 from Sunday to Tuesday. Their friendly staff would love to give you a hand to find your new favorite read. Are you looking to decolonize your self-care routine? Take a trip down to Sisters Sage for a variety of handmade soaps, bath fizzies, smudge sprays, and salves infused with traditional plant medicines. Sister Sage is an award-winning local Indigenous business run by Tsimshian entrepreneur, activist, and community builder Lynn Marie Angus and her dog TJ. Passionate about crafting wellness products that are respectful of the land we live on, Sister Sage is committed to a heart-centered approach to self-care as well as our collective healing. Located on 1312 Kingsway, you can drop by from Monday to Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. See you there.
And we are back. Those were some ads, show promos, and PSAs. The first song to play today is called Floatin' by Nicole Summerlin. And then right after that, I'll play Black Velvet by Nicole Summerlin as well. We'll be right back after these two hits.
Everybody in the cab, I'm a chud on the truth. Mississippi in the middle of a highway. Jimmy Rogers on the Victrola Pie. Mama's dancing with a baby on her shoulders. Sun is setting like molasses in the sky. The boy could sing, knew how to move everything. Always one more.
You just finished listening to Floatin' and Black Velvet. Now we have another two songs I want to play, and it's called Over a Drink, and, well, Over a Drink is from Nicole Summerlin as well, and We Used to Love Them by Vern Chichu. Again, Vern Chichu is a person that I played in my previous episodes, and so I'm bringing him back as well, and same with Summerlin as well, and so it's nice to bring people back from previous episodes. But again, Over a Drink, and We Used to Love Them. Here we go.
Between you and I, boy, I'm trying to understand why you ain't even held my hand. Are you gonna make a move or just waste my time? Over a drink, over the wine, I'm cool as not top by the end of the night. If you're feeling this, if it rings to me, then boy, don't dance around like it ain't a thing.
Now the fire's burning holes. We didn't let it go too long. It stands before us like a child. We used to love it like our own. Now the water's taking life. We're losing time, don't realize. It stands before us all alone. We used to love it like our own. Now the elders say there will come a day when everybody pays. We used to love it like God. Strong thunder, lightning all around, rolling across the open sky, and now it's on its own, running wild across the land. Mother's crying, do you understand? She stands before us all alone. We used to love her like our own. Now the elders say they
love like God.
Welcome back. That was Over a Drink by Nicole Summerlin and We Used to Love Them by Vern Chichu. We're now heading into the sonnets by, of course, William Shakespeare. We left off at Sonnet 4, and like I mentioned before, Sonnets 1 to, I think, around 16, I think that's the right one, but 1 to 16 really emphasizes the importance of procreation and leaving off your seed to the next generation to preserve yourself and your blood. And so it's really an emphasis on procreation and the reproduction of humanity itself. And so I find it really interesting how he writes all these poems, but there's 16 of them that delve into the same topic, but all 16 of them are different in their own ways and are differently worded and have different ways of conveying the same sort of message and just really dissecting the words and the lines and his intentions is really, really fascinating to me, and how it really tells us how literature could be so diverse, and through each person can develop, and through each person there could be multiple ways of conveying messages, and even through different styles of writing. And that's why I love poetry so much, and that's why I write poetry. I've also recently written a couple poems that I'm not going to read out yet, but that's the beauty of poetry, in my opinion. And so we left off at 4, and so we will start off with 5, and I am hoping to get through several, but let's just see how time is, and we'll get right into number 5, Sonnet 5. Those hours that with gentle work did frame the lovely gaze where every eye doth dwell will play the tyrants to the very same, and that unfair which fairly doth excel, for never resting time leads summer on to hideous winter and confounds him there, sap checked with frost and lusty leaves quite gone, beauty over snowed and barrenness everywhere, then were not summer's desolation left, a liquid prisoner pent in walls of glass, beauty's effect with beauty were bereft, nor it nor no remembrance what it was, but flowers distilled, though they with winter meet, lease but their show, their substance still lives sweet. Again, a beautiful piece of poem here. The theme here could be seen as, it deals with also, again, the passage of time and preservation of humanity. And so here it kind of talks about how time, it just, through time, or time, inevitably erodes beauty. And it may sound obvious, but it's significant here. Just like how he mentions summer gives away to winter. It's just an inevitable thing that just happens. But here Shakespeare, in a sense, suggests that while external beauty fades over time, the essence of it, the internal essence, could be preserved. And through poetry or lineage, the internal essence can be preserved. I think that's what he's really trying to get here, get to us here. And so if we dissect a little more here, the first quatrain. So the first quatrain is, those hours that with gentle work did frame the lovely gaze where every eye doth dwell will play the tyrants to the very same, and that unfair which fairly doth excel. Now the first quatrain here is, you can see a personification here as time as both a gentle creator and a cruel tyrant. And so the beauty that captivates all the eyes, quote unquote the lovely gaze, is in a sense created with care, but again will eventually be destroyed by the same force, which is time, that created it. Interesting. I find this very interesting. The second quatrain here from lines 5 to 8, you can see here time is described as quote-unquote never resting and relentless. And it pushes summer towards a quote-unquote hideous winter. And so for me, this symbolizes aging and decay and the vitality, quote-unquote, sap is lost to frost and beauty turns into, quote-unquote, bareness. So a lot of personifying time as both a gentle creator and cruel tyrant, like I said before, and just a lot of comparisons to nature, which I find really cool too. Third quatrain from lines 9 to 12. He here introduces the idea of preservation. And so this is where we kind of get the idea of preserving, the importance of preserving. Now, if summer's essence, if it wasn't captured in perfume, quote-unquote distillation, pent in walls of glass, beauty wouldn't be not lost. So beauty would be lost. And so this metaphor, in a sense, suggests that beauty can be retained, possibly through memory, art, or, of course, offspring. Now, the final couplets from lines 13 to 14. Here it says, "But flowers distilled, though they with winter meet, lease but their show, their substance still lives sweet." Now, even though the flowers wither in winter, their distilled essence remains sweet. And this also reinforces the notion that something essential can survive even as the physicality of it, the physical beauty of it fades. And so a beautiful comparison with the flowers in winter. "But flowers distilled, though with winter meet, lease but their show, their substance, their inner essence still lives sweet." A beautiful sonnet this is. So yeah, overall interpretation, it's basically dealing with the effects of time, while beauty is just inevitably lost to aging, its essence can be preserved through poetry, through memory, and through procreation. And again, this aligns with the whole importance of maintaining the blood lineage as much as you can. We're now getting into Sonnet 6, and so we'll give this one a read. "Then let not winter's ragged hand deface in thee thy summer, ere thou be distilled. Make sweet some vial, treasure thou some place with beauty's treasure, ere it be self-killed. That use is not forbidden usury, which happies those that pay the willing loan. That's for thyself to breathe another thee, or 10 times happier, be it 10 for 1. 10 times thyself were happier than thou art, if 10 of thine 10 times refigured thee. Then what could death do if thou shouldest depart, leaving thee living in posterity? Be not self-willed, for thou art much too fair to be death's conquest and make worms thine hair." Cool poem. Here, again, the urge to procreate and the impermanence of beauty. And here you could see how the poem warns the young man that time, which is also personified as the winter ragged hand, will eventually destroy his youthful beauty. But here, Shakespeare presents an alternative. And the alternative is reproduction. Reproduction as a way to counteract time's effects and to ensure his beauty survives in future generations. I find it so fascinating how the same theme, the theme remains the same, but the way he writes is so different. In a sense, it's so different and so unique. I've never seen anyone do and write like Shakespeare. It's so fascinating to me. To dissect lines 1 to 4, the winter ragged hand is a metaphor for aging and eventual decay of youth. Now, here winter represents death and decline, while summer is, in a sense, embodying the speaker's youth, represents vitality. And where it says, quote-unquote, distilled, it could possibly be a reference to the process of making perfume or essential oils, which preserve the essence of flowers. And this also kind of makes me think about the other poem we wrote, or not wrote, reread right before this, Sonnet 5, about the word distilled. And I could see here that this distilledness could be a metaphor for procreation. By having children, the young man can distill and preserve his beauty in another form. Make sweet some vial can suggest storing beauty in a container, which is also could be a metaphor for offspring. And quote-unquote, treasure thou some place with beauty's treasure. Now, this encourages the young man to safeguard his beauty, to really preserve it by passing it down rather than just allowing it to fade. And so that's also very significant here. Lines 5 to 8. The term use and usury is cool. These terms, again, it's kind of economical. Usury was often condemned as exploitative lending. But Shakespeare argued that this kind of use, having children, is not only acceptable but beneficial. And which happies those that pay the willing loan. Now, if one willingly loans their beauty through procreation, it brings happiness rather than loss. That's significant in that line there. That, quote-unquote, that's for thyself to breed another thee. So the ultimate goal here is to reproduce and create a version of oneself. Or 10 times happier, be it 10 for 1. So if one child is good, having multiple is even better. Multiplication enhances happiness and legacy. Now, when I read this, I really am forced to think about the society we live in now and how little children we are having, especially in specific countries. I've heard that a lot of countries are just, not a lot of, but a couple of them I've seen so far on the internet, the government's actually paying the citizens to marry. And that to me is really crazy. And how Shakespeare kind of knows about this back in his day as well, and knows about the importance of having children. You know, of course, it's your life and you have the right to do whatever you want, but I see a very, I value having children, and so I'm not sure what's going to happen to me in the future, but as of right now, having children does seem like a very valuable thing to have in life, and to really preserve and maintain your own lineage and humanity itself. Lines 9 to 12, here we kind of get a sense of the multiplication of beauty as a defense against death. That's a cool way to look at it. The multiplication of beauty, reproduction as a defense against death. I never thought about it that way, but that's a cool way of thinking about it. As in, quote-unquote, 10 times thyself. Now, here the sonnet kind of exaggerates the benefits of having many children. And it kind of says multiplying oneself protects against mortality. Now, the mortality here isn't necessarily talking about the physical mortality. It's talking about the internal, the soul. And so having a lot of children will defend you against the destruction of moral soul mortality. And what could death do if thou shouldest depart? Now, this is a rhetorical question, and it implies that death loses its power if one's lineage continues. So there's a lot of comparisons here. So the physical death is there, but the internal death is not there. And death itself loses its capability to live if the lineage continues, which is interesting. Now, leaving thee living in posterity. Now, posterity is referred to as future generations and ensures that even after death, a part of oneself remains alive. Now, the last couplet here, be not self-willed, for thou art much too fair to be death's conquest and make worms thine hair. Now, the phrase be not self-willed, the speaker warns against selfishness and stubbornness of refusing to have children. And here, much too fair to be death's conquest, the young man's beauty is too great to be lost to death. Make worms thine hair. Without offspring, his only hairs will be the worms that consume his body after death. Now, this could be a morbid contrast to the idea of children inheriting beauty and life. Interesting. Okay, we are now here at Sonnet 7. Let's give this one a read. Lo, in the Orient, where the gracious lie, or gracious light, lives up his burning head, each under eye, doth homage to his new appearing sight, serving with looks his sacred majesty. And having climbed the steep up heavenly hill, resembling strong youth in his middle age, yet mortal looks adore his beauty still, attending on his golden pilgrimage. But when from highmost pitch with weary car, like feeble age, he reeleth from the day, the eyes, for duteous, now converted are, from his low tract, and look another way. So thou thyself outgoing in thy noon, unlooked on deest, unless thou get a son. Interesting here, good poem. Let's do some close reading. Now the phrase, lo in the Orient when the gracious light, the Orient is interpreted as east, and that's where the sun rises, and it represents the beginning of life and youth. And the gracious light can refer to the sun, which is personified as a noble figure. And quote-unquote lifts up his burning head. The sun is metaphorically lifting its head like a king rising to rule. And this, in a sense, symbolizes the beauty and power of youth. And each under eye doth homage was a cool phrase that I kind of took note of as well. And it's saying how just as people admire the rising sun, youth is also revered and praised by others. And quote-unquote, serving with looks his secret majesty, the sun, like a monarch, commands attention and admiration, just as a beautiful young person is admired. From lines 5 to 8, here we kind of see the sun being put up on a pedestal. It's the sun at its peak, the prime of life. And where he says, having climbed the steep up heavenly hill, that kind of explains the sun's journey through the sky. And that, in a sense, mirrors the person's ascent from youth to adulthood. And so the hill here, the heavenly hill, I think, represents the effort and struggles of human life. Or just life in general. And the phrase, resembling strong youth in his middle age. Now, here, resembling strong youth in the middle age, that's kind of a paradox. And it suggests that even at its peak, midday, the sun is still admired like a youthful figure in their prime. Now, that's a cool little paradox line that we are presented here with. And then if you go into, yet mortal looks adore his beauty still, people continue to admire his beauty even as it approaches its peak and begins its decline. And then we hear, It says, attending on his golden pilgrimage. Now, the sun's path across the sky is likened to a religious journey. It's compared to a religious journey, pilgrimage. And that kind of reinforces the importance and grandeur of the sun's path across the sky. Here, lines 9 to 12. Here we are presented with now the sun's decline. But when the highmost pitch with weary car, the sun, now at its highest point, begins its descent. The weary car could be seen as a chariot. It alludes to classical mythology, particularly the sun god Helios, who drove the chariot of the sun across the sky. So a lot of religious and ancient Greek mythologies are involved in this sonnet as well. And where we see, like, feeble age, he reeleth from the day. Now, this is a decline, of course, and it mirrors the old age. And so, as one ages, the admiration of that person fades. The eyes for duteous now converted are those who once admired the young man's beauty will now turn away as he ages, which is sad, but that's just how it is. And from his low tract and look another way, just as people turn away from the setting sun, the aging person, the aging man, they will no longer pay attention to the young man once his beauty fades, which is sad, but which is also why Shakespeare is emphasizing the importance of procreation. And now we are presented with the final couplet, and this is the solution. And what is the solution? Of course, procreation. So thou thyself outgoing in thy noon, unlooked on deest unless thou get a son. Now the young man is not being admired because of his old age, but if he has a child, his beauty and legacy will thrive and preserve his beauty. But if he does not have a child, like the last line, his beauty and legacy will disappear with him. And the only way to ensure continued admiration and remembrance is through procreation. So a beautiful story of life here. Sonnet 7 is a beautiful cycle of life, and then a punch of the important message at the end, which is beautiful. Now, we did have one more sonnet remaining, sonnet 8, for today, but due to time, we'll just kind of stop here. We took a look at sonnet 5 to 7, all regarding the importance of procreation, but through different angles and different metaphors and different comparisons, which is the beauty of Shakespeare and the beauty of poetry. But that is the end of the episode today. We've done quite a bit of close reading today, and I'm pretty happy with that. And so our next episode, I will delve into Sonnet 8 and a couple more. We're going on a Shakespeare run here, and I'm having a blast so far, and I hope you guys are too. But make sure to just let me know if you have any other suggestions or works that I should go over. I'll be more than happy to do so. But other than that, that is the end of Jess's Lit for today. I hope everyone is doing well. I hope everyone has a great rest of their weeks. And I will see you again next week with another episode. Thank you all for joining Jess's Lit. I'll see you guys again soon. Bye-bye.